Yeah, that's a song by a group called 38 Special. Anyway, what's the name of the song? It's called Second Chance. A lot of stuff in the news, big stuff in the news, tectonic plates type stuff. So I wanted to have Jeff, Kenny, and Tim Lynch on. So they join me today. Tim, how you doing?
Doing fine. Thanks, Mac. Thanks for having me on again.
You bet. And Jeff, how's life?
Good. I'm doing good. Thank you.
All right. Let's just talk about the region. And Jeff, we'll start with you. It's been interesting. I remember having John Allen on, and General Type. And I mean, for those of you who don't know him, he is big on strategy, right? And grand strategy and national goals and things like that. And so one of the things he said on the program, and I asked him to start, and I said, if people don't understand the Saudi-Iranian thing, the Sunni-Shiite thing, where are they in the region? And he said, they're nowhere. He said, the fundamental rift in the region starts there. And it is those two countries as the marquee players. So, Jeff, let me cede you the floor. Talk about the region, your thoughts and your impressions on the region.
Well, first of all, I concur with what General Allen said, for sure. And second of all, the Iranians are in a bad way because the sanctions we have on them are actually very meaningful. And unlike, I think, a lot of the sanctions that were put on in past years were put on in such a way that they didn't really hurt the Iranians very much, but it looked good in the Western press that we were doing sanctions on people who had malign intent. But now, since 2017, these sanctions have hurt. And consequently, the Iranians are desperately trying to get us off of it, and so a lot of the things that have happened, that we talked about earlier with the drone shootdowns and so forth, I think are all manifestations of that. This particular incident that just happened is something that it's almost like throughout the region we've been waiting for the shoe to drop, and somebody actually weaponizes these drones in a meaningful way, and that happened when those guys hit those oil fields and those refineries in Saudi Arabia. Because that was really the first meaningful attack. It's almost like a Pearl Harbor type thing that occurred. And the thing that makes it even more kind of dicey for us is we have these, for lack of a better term, advisor teams spread throughout Iraq right now that have the ability to access ISR, to access recon and electronic surveillance of things and fires that can help the Iraqis. And we've been helping them since 2015 deal with ISIS in just that way. But the other thing that's going on in Iraq is that all over the battle space, and when I say battle space, I mean all over Anbar province and Mosul area, all over Iraq right now, you have Shia militia groups that are in areas that were traditionally only populated by Sunnis. And that's the case in Iraq right now. What I heard was there's a possibility that some of these things might have got launched from that area of Iraq. And then I heard also that they were so sophisticated they might have been launched all the way from Iran. But the bottom line is this is an Iranian strike against Saudi Arabia to try and drive a wedge, I think, between us and the Saudis. Immediately after this thing happened, you guys know this, the Houthis, who are backed up in Yemen by Iran, claimed responsibility for it.
Right.
But it's just not realistic that they could do it. And, initial reporting, and this isn't classified, this is open source. Initial reporting is that the attitude, that the trajectory of these things came from the north and the east, and not from the south, which is where Yemen is in relation to where the target was. So I think that this is almost a desperation move on the Iranians. And I don't want to monopolize the conversation here, but Iran just like America, when they do things, they're doing them for multiple audiences. Number one, they do it for the world audience, specifically us and the Saudis and the Europeans and so forth. But number two, they do it for a domestic audience, too. They are not a monolithic society. And with the advent of the Internet and the ways of communication and the type of people, the sophistication of a lot of the people in Iran, there's alternate point of views getting in there than what the religious government would like to have, you know, accessible to the population. So this is a very tense situation, you know, that and the fact that we have a vulnerability, and the vulnerability is, excuse me, is our military personnel there in Iraq right now.
All right, Timmy.
Yeah, and Jeff is right to be concerned about our military personnel. The other thing about Iran is they're in, I think, year five of a serious drought. And so they have water, ample water in the Caspian Basin area, but that's not much of the country. Most of the country is undergoing some significant drought conditions, which is just one more pressure point on the Iranian, on the Ayatollahs. And one of the ways you can get a people, one of the more traditional ways, that particularly with with regimes like Iran, the traditional ways of getting the people to pay attention to something else is to kick off a shooting war. Because quite frankly, it's hard for me to imagine what they think they're going to gain from doing this, other than it's always worked for them before.
So
you guys remember, they just when they're on the cusp of the agreement, the Iran deal with the Obama administration, they grabbed those sailors in the Gulf. It was like a stupid move. And I listened to some, I can't remember who, but I was listening to one of these Iran, it might have been that CIA guy who's on Fox News, but he said that because they have competing groups in Iran who sometimes make actions against each other, you know, and in order to embarrass each other. I mean, we could say we have that too, you know, but that incident there, you remember when they grabbed that Navy, like that small Navy patrol ship there a couple years ago?
Yep.
It's humiliating for the United States. These guys are crying on TV and stuff like that. But it was also not in their, it wasn't in their interest to be twisting our tail like that. We were already doing what they wanted, you know?
Right. The I don't have a gauge on how much how badly Iran is hurting. There hasn't been any recent reporting in open source stuff that we look at about, you know, more unrest in Iran. The last time it happened, you had the people where they had historically never ever really had much of a problem, and that is in the rural areas of Iran, right? Protesting, saying that, look, this is enough is enough. You know, we can't cash pension paychecks. You know, there's not enough there's not enough food around to kind of dovetail off what Tim said. So I haven't seen anything since that. So let's talk about motive, right? And so you've seen the complexities of not really sure where it got launched from, but the Houthis standing up and saying, hey, we did it. So let's talk about the motive. Why? Jeff?
I think what they're trying to do is they realize that we're a divided country here in the United States. And yet, even divided as we are, we have caused a lot of consternation to regimes like Iran and, by extent, you know, North Korea and so forth, because we're forcing our allies to live up to their agreements. At the same time, when we're doing these things that used to be, I think, cosmetic, like, i.e. the sanctions, you know, everybody kind of like, it was almost kind of like a kabuki game, you know?
Right.
Now it isn't. Now it's real. And it hurts.
Okay, when we did this before, we talked about, so who's the audience for this? Is this this for American domestic consumption? Because what they were looking for when they started grabbing tankers and all that kabuki dance was screaming to Europe, we need relief from you, and it hasn't come yet. So who's this targeted for?
I actually think a large part of it is for internal consumption, because they have these, they have a, there's a messianic strain through the ruling party there in Iran, to where they're, you got folks over there who are like the Shia version of Osama bin Laden and Al Qaeda. And as a matter of fact, until the attacks in 9/11, they had killed more Americans than any other group through the Hezbollah and everything, which really is just an extension of the Quds Party. So the there is that group there, and then there is the group of moderates, and then there's the people who are not stupid, and they're plugged in. I mean, smart as they are, they're not. That is not a closed society. The North Koreans don't hear a lot of stuff, but the Iranians do. And so I think a lot of this is just for internal, consumption. But I don't think it's working. I think there's an era of desperation about this thing for me.
Got
the way, my opinion.
All right, Tim. The motive of all this.
I go back to
hold
the point
on.
I'm
the motive, the motive, and the object of the motive. Who's the audience for?
Right. I think the audience right now extends beyond just internally and into not only the United States but the entire world, in that they're putting a squeeze on the oil supply right now. So you've got a significant decrease in exports. That doesn't hurt us so much. Actually, it hurts California. You guys get 24% of your oil from there. But, I mean, Texas doesn't get any, but it hurts China. It hurts Japan. It hurts a lot of people who will put pressure on the United States. But simultaneously, they've been baiting us for months to attack them, which I surmise would automatically result in lots of collateral damage, because they're going to put people there so you'll hit them, because that's what they always do.
Yeah.
And that and I think that they think that the world opinion will work against us and get Trump out of office and get somebody else in office, because I said this a few months ago, I don't think they've got an accurate read on the American electorate. Because the damn Europeans, the Democratic Party doesn't have an accurate read on the American electorate. I think they think Trump is more vulnerable than I believe that Trump is.
I agree with Jeff that I think the primary audience is a domestic audience, and because I think that their view of, I mean, just I want to say a week or 10 days ago, they were yelling at Europe, "We need more. We need more help from you." And so far, you know, the Europeans, you know, I think the last thing I saw was Europe telling them, "Hey, you need to come back to the old agreement," because where Iran is right now, saying that, "Hey, we've begun the process." You know, Europe's now looking at them and saying, "Hey, look, you're not giving us any ground to stand on." And so this, and I don't think, I mean, they can play charades all they want, right, in terms of who actually did this. But does anybody believe, Jeff, do either one of you believe that this operation doesn't go forward without somebody in Tehran who's extremely high up saying, "Do it"?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think the actual, this attack was too wide, too big, you know, for it to be, you know, a one-off, for sure. And if it came all the way from, I don't know the technology really of the, you know, how advanced it is, but I imagine the drones can go a long way. But this was like a swarm of them, from what I understand. And if they had come all the way, I mean, here's the thing about them. We got a lot of Patriot missiles in that area. They're geared, of course, towards fighting other missiles and, you know, anti-aircraft and so forth, other types of defenses. This type of stuff either was not big enough to get picked up by that, or there's some other way they defeated it. They went right in there, you know. And I think that, you know, what's going to happen, this is what I mean, it's not, they're not really thinking about, I don't think, you know, leverage as far as the rest of the world goes. Because what will happen is Trump will give out some of our, you know, strategic oil reserves to make Europe not really suffer in a meaningful way, or anybody else who gets supplied, you know, by the Saudis, and it'll make the Iranians look even weaker. So I think it is for the internal consumption, you know, because, you know, this may actually, I just feel like we're at like a, you know, we're at like a very critical point here. And the one thing that worked for them when they first overthrew the Shah, it was very, they were very chaotic and everything. And the one thing that kind of coalesced them and gave them their first big victory, it's kind of like their version of our, of us winning the revolution, was they did that 440-day hostage thing. And at the same time, then having that stupid idiot Saddam Hussein invade them, it made them an iron country then. It united them. They're united against us, the great Satan. They're united against, you know, Saddam, who, of course, they presented as a puppet of the United States. And we helped, actually, by, you know, getting in there with them a little bit. So I think now that may be the desperation move. And that's why I'm nervous about our folks there in Iraq. Because they're not really in a defensive posture. They're in a security posture. Kind of like we were when we, you know, but you don't have 1-2 and 2-6 and, you know, the 3rd Infantry Division, you know, surrounding you. You basically got the headquarters types with no muscle really around them.
All right, Timmy, your thoughts on this.
Well, so you've got the provocations going with Iran against Saudi Arabia. My big focus, you know, it's hard to say what the hell Iran's up to, but I know one thing we should be worried about is what we're up to, because Saudi Arabia, you know, we go back to 9/11 as much as a bone as I have to pick with the Iranians, and I used to make a joke about that in IOC because I was in Beirut in '83, you know, because I was always saying about getting back to those guys. The damn Saudis have as big a damn problem as culpable as anybody with 9/11, and their Diabandi mosques and their exportation of that specific kind of Sunni extremism is what's destabilizing that entire region. And so my whole point is, Iran's not the only asshole in this thing. You've got the Saudis, and I don't give a damn about those guys. It will take a lot of time for us to pick up where Saudi has come off from oil production wise. We can't just assume that burden, but we can get there eventually. And I don't give a damn about those guys, and they have yet to be held accountable for the bullshit they pulled.
You don't care about the Saudis, so but there was cameras in the Oval Office yesterday. And the president talking, you know, saying we're locked and loaded, which I hate, you know.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm not sure he understands the term. But it's just this bloviating bullshit, you know, statement. What interest does the United States have? One of our allies got an oil refinery bombed. And everybody who understands how the tea leaves work knows that that operation doesn't go forward without consent from Tehran. And so Tehran now takes a fairly major swing at Saudi Arabia. Now, what role does the United States have in all this thing? Jeff, what role do we have in all this?
I kind of agree with Tim. We should stay out. And I'll tell you why. Do you remember when Saddam, during Desert Shield, was shooting missiles into Saudi Arabia and into at Israel, trying to broaden what was his problem, you know, taking over Kuwait and then us kicking his ass out, trying to broaden it into a whole, you know, Middle East writ large problem with Israel and us, you know, and the Saudis being the enemies. And I think... we should avoid that type of image. I would like to see if the Iranian, I mean, I am with Tim. You know, the Saudis they got maligned fingerprints all over the whole, you know, the whole Al Qaeda terrorist thing, particularly, you know, the attacks on September 11th. But I have to say, it's a toss up between who's worse, you know, those two. Once again, we're in this, you know, Sophie's type choice thing between somebody as bad as Hitler or somebody as bad as Stalin. And they're not that bad. And the only reason they're not that bad is because they're not that competent, you know. But it's something I think we should avoid getting involved in a kinetic way unless we directly get attacked.
All right. So, Tim, what's our role in this then?
I think the traditional Washington view is our role is to protect the world's markets in order to avoid gigantic black swan hits onto the world markets that cost billions of dollars to recover from. That will be the Washington's reason for staying engaged in these areas and allowing for freedom of navigation.
Yeah, but if I would push back on that and saying we've insulated ourselves from that with the shale oil, and you know the United States as the major oil energy exporter in the world. I mean, we've mitigated ourselves against that. And do we have an interest in making sure that Japan and China doesn't pay more for oil?
And there is the rub. The traditional, I think, Washington establishment would say, yes, we do, because we're the only ones that can keep the sea lanes open or whatnot. I, however, as you have been able to detect, I am no longer of that view. I say to hell with them. I'm back to what I said last summer. Put the damn 7th Fleet on Libo. Send them to Singapore. Let them party for a while. The hell with those guys. I could care less. But nobody's listening to my particular views.
Yeah. And if you go to Singapore, don't spit your gum out either. You can trouble for that. What? I have the same thought. And I always makes me nervous when I agree with somebody like Mitt Romney. But Mitt Romney issued a statement yesterday saying, "Hey, we should stand steadfast in our support for our Saudi allies and respond to whatever requests they have for us. But right now, this is a Saudi issue and not an American issue." And I agree with that. And the other thing I say that goes back to, it's kind of funny because the last time we talked about, and we all agreed that, the last time the Iranians acted up, it was, hey, those sanctions are hurting. And they're looking for America. They're going to make America the villain, and then say, "Hey, that's why you should help us. Look at them. Once again, they're exploiting us." And if we just steady the course and let them eat it, and slowly but surely choke on it, then to me, at some point, they've got to come to grips with the fact that they may risk the whole, endeavor, and is it worth it? And so this is again affirmation that those sanctions are hurting, as Jeff said, and to respond to it is to do the dance that they want to do. And I say, don't do the dance they want to do. Do the dance that they don't want to do, which assures that they don't get relief. And that's the dance they don't want to do.
And you know what else you can do at the same time is you could start, and I mentioned this before too, and I'd love to see the president do it. You could start going to China and places in Africa and whatnot and saying, hey, look, the Saudis are not a dependable supplier. They're not a dependable energy supplier. And we've got this clean liquid petroleum that we can give you for you. We'll show you how to build the plants. You'll start improving the environment, yada, yada, yada. You could actually explode the natural gas market because it's a better damn fuel. For energy
production. I don't think you need to do that. You just need to, let your businessmen go and make the case, and then you can say, I don't know what they're doing. We're on board helping you, but, that's a consumer decision that China's making in terms of stable region, right, better product. So, yeah, we don't really have anything to do with that. We're sorry you lose a market share again. But too bad. Jeff?
Yeah.
Thoughts on the course of action by the United States?
I think we should either yank all those guys out of Iraq or harden the fuck out of their positions, man. Because
all right, let's talk about that. You have for months expressed your concern over lightly fortified positions with American advisors as our beef with Iran kind of ebbs and flows, and that you lived it firsthand you were there before the Iranian hostage, but you knew some of the people involved in it. Explain your concern to everybody again.
Well, Iraq is covered with these what we call SMGs, Shia militia groups, and a lot of them are anti-Iran. But a lot of them are pro Iran.
Okay, hold on. Let me have you. You know, so these Shia militia groups are being used as what, and why are they all over the place now, as opposed to just historically in the Shiite areas protecting
those?
To expand
on what you said, that General Allen was saying, those are traditionally Sunni areas of Iraq, and after we pulled out of there in 2011, and when ISIS came in, they walked right through those Sunni areas. It's almost like the Sunni minority in Anbar province and other places there in the western part of the country, all the way up to the gates of Baghdad in some cases, just kind of said, let's see how these guys are. And so the majority of people who live in Iraq are Shia. And so all those places that had, you know, formerly just been populated by Sunnis are now there's militant groups of Iraqi Shia in those areas. And some of them are directly supported by Iran and do what Iran says. And I don't know which ones. I mean, I haven't been there in years, but I know that that's the case. And if something was to happen, if some Americans were to be, you know, kidnapped, or if just their area taken over by sheer mass by some of these guys, then Iran could present themselves as the go-between between people who are doing exactly what they're telling them to do. You know what I mean? They could work that thing like they did when we had our hostages in Lebanon and so forth in the mid and late 80s. And it would just be a pain in the neck. Not to mention a misery for whoever it is they took. The other thing about this, I got to tell you, those SMGs, they did a lot of dying and crying kicking ISIS out of there. So they're not without, they're not just, thugs. They actually did a lot of the hard fighting that drove the ISIS folks out of there or underground. So I'm just saying, that's, I always think, okay, you know, I'm in the defense now because we've culminated, I got to wait here, whatever. Where am I vulnerable? You know? So you set up your, in a basic way, you defend yourself. You put out your patrols, you put out your listening posts and stuff like that, you tie into whatever kind of technology you have, and you weight your defensive effort towards what the biggest threat is. I'm just saying there, I feel vulnerable there in that area. And I know there's Iranian people within the Iranian government who would see that as an inviting target and a way to gain leverage over us. And that's why it makes me nervous.
Timmy?
Well, it makes me nervous to hear that Jeff is that nervous, because I don't know how big or how small these packets of advisors and trainers are. But what I do know is those damn Iranian militias know exactly where the hell they are and how big they are, because they're watching 24/7. This is something the three of us know well from our time overseas. And so the one thing about Iran rattling his saber trying to get us to take a shot at them is it may or may not work. I mean, the president's already spoofed them once, but they grab a half dozen Americans, and that's a whole different thing. And now we've got more than our national prestige on the line. Now we've got a real issue, and that's scary to think about.
Yeah, I don't know that people who weren't alive for the Iranian hostage thing. I don't understand if they understand our fear. That was disgusting, right? America, I mean, inept. And our hostages paraded out in front of the media and all of that. And it was horrible, right? The messages to their families and all the rest of that stuff, to the government, all that stuff. It was sickening to watch. And so, I think you can hear in everybody's voice that's a true fear. And then what it really plays on is, what comes through the American television, which is, historically, our critical vulnerability. And it was like that in Vietnam and everywhere we go. I was watching another General Mattis speech and him talking about being stopped once we entered Fallujah. And the reason that we got stopped was because the video coming back was too bad, right? Cameras in and around the city with everybody, and it was horrible. And it's coming back on a nightly basis, and it's like, oh shit, we can't have this. We're trying to get reelected. This hijacks every goddamn town hall meeting we have. Put an end to that stuff. Tell Mattis to put everybody in check. And that's what they did.
It wasn't horrible from the Americans. It wasn't horrible from the American casualty perspective. I just wanted to make sure I'm remembering that right.
Well, no.
Their ass is too bad.
It was horrible relative to the visuals, right?
Right. Oh yeah.
And you get an intimate look, right, at death. And then you know, I remember under an overpass, an Amtrak stopped. You have to and then. You know, somebody had been killed or wounded.
Right.
And they're all in a huddle praying. And so you're watching it and you're like, I mean, that's a brutal, intimate look. Like, here's a camera in your face. And, you know, it's just happened. And this goes back to the United States right now.
Right.
And so, you know, it's just, it's just tough. I don't know, we're not managing that, but, you know, we saw the same thing to, you know, the graphic footage from Vietnam and the impact that had on the American people. And you have somebody begging, you know, for their lives, somebody begging for their family. Then their family's put on TV every night. And it's just, you know, if you don't remember that, then I don't know that, you know, you understand what we're talking about.
And it's different for a serviceman. I don't think it's the same for a contractor or from some other American citizen that gets swooped up by the bad guys. When they get an American serviceman, it means something. That serviceman is standing in for all of us, and you can't ignore these kind of things. You know, you just can't. We sure as hell not going to, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What other thoughts of do you have about this issue, Jeff?
Well, the only thing that kind of exacerbates it. I mean, I'll just say this, and that'll be it about that. Is that they could present themselves. I'm talking about the government of Iran as like the go-between these naughty boys who just happen to be Shia in Iraq, who, you know, have some of our people or whatever, and them. It's a total sham, you know, just like it was during the original hostage crisis. But they could get leverage that way, maybe to get us to back off on some of these sanctions. That's why I hate the idea of backing off at all. So I just want to, and I don't know I just know open source stuff. I don't know, you know, about other plans that we have or other, you know, things that we know about the Iranians that they know we know about them. I don't know about any of that. I'm hoping that type of leverage exists too. I'm just saying, you know, I would hate to have something like that happen. And I believe that right now there's people in Iran who are telling, you know, the mullahs and stuff, saying, "Hey, we can make this guy turn from being, you know, big old Trump to another the latest version of Jimmy Carter." Remember what we did on him, you know? And right. And so it might be that there's courses of action, like the course of action to go ahead and drone the shit out of those oil fields in Saudi Arabia, course of action to do something, because especially when, Trump was right. He was bombastic day before yesterday, but today he wasn't. Today he's saying, you know, we don't, you know, he was a lot more circumspect. And so I just, it's a time where it could mean great success for us. But it also is the time when they pull a desperation card, and that results in, you know, unfortunate stuff for Americans.
The I'm just trying to think. I just don't think that the this isn't our issue to play first. This is a Saudi issue.
Right.
And I don't get, you know, first of all, the president should be quiet, which will be interesting to see if he can do that. You know, the second question I have is, what kind of technology? So drone swarms tend to be, I mean, are they robust enough, right, to carry some kind of significant ordnance, yet, you know, dodge radar?
Yes. Yeah, I know. That's the question.
You know, and so what you're talking about, and if it came, if they came from that kind of a distance, it can't be a small platform.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, I just don't know anything about that. I got to try and get smart on that. What about you, Timmy?
Well, I know that it has to be a large platform that's relatively sophisticated just by the way of it, of its accuracy. I mean, that's pretty fucking impressive.
Yeah, no. I mean, and when you look at the size of the fire, either somebody got lucky with a relatively small piece of ordnance. But to me, if you're talking about a swarm of drones flying how far, controlled by what?
And you don't knock out 5% of their oil production with a Tinian shot, right?
Right.
I mean, that's not luck. Maybe one fire's luck, but not that kind of devastation.
Right.
Yeah, I just so to me, I haven't seen enough about this attack. To me, it looks like a drone swarm.
Yeah.
A drone swarm is, you know, launched inside of Saudi Arabia? Because, I mean, how do you control? Do you control them by satellites? And who's controlling a drone swarm by satellite?
Right.
Otherwise, it's got to be line of sight, right? And I mean, and then if you have a powerful transmitter, you can begin to control it. But that means it got launched within.
Yeah, like there's already the explosive's already there. The drone's a distraction. You know what I'm saying? Like. I mean, I don't know. It's wild, that speculation on my part.
Right.
And the satellite thing, every time they've tried to launch a satellite this year, it's blown up on the rocket pad. So it's not like they've got a shit ton of satellites up there either.
Yeah, I just don't know. I just don't know enough. And I have to tell you, I think we're going to find out more about that. You know, because... You know, it's very concerning for sure. I mean, the Saudis are like, oh, we didn't think, you know, this is going to happen to us. And, yeah, this is something that I just don't know enough about the technology regarding drones.
Yeah, I you know, my questions are pretty fundamental in terms of, you know, how it's like the it kind of reminds me of the discussion we get into about hypersonic missiles, right? Okay,
yeah.
I got it. It can go forever. How do you find a target, and how do you track the target if it's a dynamic target? Well, you don't get good answers to that, and so
right.
I don't understand a lot of this. To me, for me, what it looks like is one of two things. If this was satellite controlled, or how else would you control it, Jeff? Any idea?
Unless you had an airborne relay.
An airborne relay. There you go. Well, we would find that. I mean, we would detect that.
We saw it regardless. Whatever, however they did it, I'm sure we saw it. I'm just not so sure we're going to find out anytime soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. The physics behind how this was put together, right? So what kind of ordnance was used in it? I mean, you know, whatever type of ordnance then tells you, well, this is what kind of platform it had to be. Is it smaller platforms carrying hand grenades that are targeting what? And then did the hand grenade drop on something? Or when we talk about a drone strike, are we talking about, you know, bigger drones, you know, that are satellite controlled by somebody somewhere? And to me, that's what this looks like. But, you know, we would have a good handle on that in the region. So that's what, you know, Jeff said, and it was a swarm, which we've read about for years now, a drone swarm. And so I'm intrigued by how this could have happened.
Remember, a couple months ago, we were talking about the siege of Khe Sanh and how, you know, the North Vietnamese wanted, they had fake signatures for a lot of their indirect fire.
Right.
To mask the fact the indirect fire was coming from a lot closer and reverse slopes of, you know, the hills that were there. So maybe there wasn't as many drones as people think. Maybe some of that shit was already there and went off. I mean, if you don't want to have people turning their own organization, their own country upside down looking for your spies, your bomb planting spies. You want them to think it's a bunch of drones, you know, that did the thing. You know, I got nothing to base that on. I just don't know enough about, you know, how these things work. I got to get smart on it. I got to read.
No, I mean, what it talks to is, it talks to who did this, how could they do it? But I think we're all unanimous in that, you know, America should, this is not our fight, right? Americans were not struck. Saudi Arabia was struck. And we should let them deal with it and support our ally like we would any of our allies. But this is not, nobody punched us in the face. No Americans have been killed. And so, interesting.
All right. And the one thing is I forgot to mention this earlier about Iran. There's three times as many people there as there were when the mullahs took over. So that internal pressure is significant in that because they've had such a gigantic explosion in their population. And the other thing is, as you watch this long term, China can't afford financially to take this kind of hit in its energy imports. They can't for all the reasons that Grant Newsom was talking about earlier in this week. And all the reasons that he's talked about continuously. I'm watching China and Japan how this shakes out if it goes for any length of time. It's because that could be a big deal.
Right.
All right, Jeff. Any final words?
No, I just it's pretty interesting. I think things are gonna happen fast over there. You know, I really think that the Iranian government is there are factors within. Their regime that are at odds with each other. That's going to result in chaotic actions like what happened with the drone thing.
Got it. All right. So we'll see. Hopefully, we'll keep our hands in our pockets and feed intelligence to the Saudis and help them craft a response. But the biggest thing is the long term position that we keep Iran in. And that it continues to put pressure on that regime that is clearly, if knowing that this, the assumption is, and I think we all believe it, that somebody very, very high up in Iran on the Revolutionary Guard side approved this. And they approved it for a reason. And it's to draw, I think, the Saudis initially and then the United States into something significant and then call time out and say, okay, let's all settle. Europe, we need your relief and we need you to be in charge here. So we'll see. Yeah. All right, boys. Thanks. Yeah. On short notice, thanks for doing this.
Hey, man, safe travels, Mac. Have a good flight.
Yeah.
Yeah, headed.
Quantico, the modern day Marine.
That's right. Good to go. Good luck out there.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun. General Officer Symposium is going on, so I'll get a chance to see some of my friends and see if I can see General Kennedy, who just recently resigned. So it might be a fun trip, boys.
Give him our best, man.
All right.
Same to Dave too.
All right, there you have it, Jeff Kenny and Tim Lynch. More Ball Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.